Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. First up on our agenda tonight is introductions. I'm Kim Allen, currently the chair. I represent South Kitsap County.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Richard Shaddock, I'm from Central Kitsap.
Jim Svensson, South Kitsap.
Mike Eliason, Central Kitsap.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Ed Galloway, South Kitsap.
Very good. I propose our next item is adoption of the agenda. And actually, I would propose moving items C and D to after the public hearing, if we could have a motion for that.
So moved.
Okay. Second.
Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor of moving items C and D to the after the work study and public hearing, item F, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And raise your hand, too, so Amanda can see. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay, and with that, we will, we do have an item, item E, general comment. This is a time where we have members of the public address the Planning Commission on items that are not on our agenda for this evening. I see an awful number of folks here, and I'm assuming you're here for the public hearing on the comprehensive plan updates and the Dickey Pitt Amendment. If you are, then we'll just wait until we finish the staff presentation and open the public hearing on those matters. But if there's anyone who wants to address us on something not on our agenda, this is the time. Okay. Well, with that, we will close item E and move on to item F. This is the work study and public hearing continued from January 7th, 2020. On the 2019 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Update, we have Peter Best staffing this, and he will move us through the work study and let me know when it's time to open the public hearing. Mr. Shattuck.
Madam Chair, to make sure we avoid appearance of fairness issues with regard to this specific amendment, I have a potential conflict of interest, and I will be recusing myself from further action on the Dickey Pitt Amendment specifically. I don't know if the work study is going to be more than the Dickey Pitt.
Mr. Best, can you inform us on that?
The work study will just be Dickey Pitt.
Okay. At this point, I'll recuse myself.
Okay. And we'll send Amanda out when...
Well, I'll be attending as a member of the public.
All right. That's fine. All right. Very good. Mr. Best, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Peter Best. I'm Senior Planner with the Department of Community Development. So tonight, given the size of our audience, I'm going to take a few minutes to do the overview that we had at our last public hearing, just so everybody has the same kind of background and context about comprehensive planning and how these annual amendments fit into that. And then we'll dive into our work study focused only on the Dickey Pitt site-specific amendment.
Mr. Best, let me just interrupt you for one moment, just to let the members of the public know that if you wish to be heard in the public hearing that follows this, if you would please sign the sheet in the back of the room with your name and your contact information. I'll be using that sheet to call on people as we move into the public hearing phase. So please don't forget to sign in. And welcome.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. After tonight, on February 4th, the Planning Commission will be asked to deliberate on all six of the amendments and adopt recommendations and findings of fact. So in your packet tonight, in addition to the staff report and all the previous staff reports that you've received, you also got some preliminary comments that came in, approximately 16 comments that had come in as of the 15th of January. Since then, we've received about 10 more. And the comment period continues through tomorrow night at midnight. So following the close of the comment period, you'll be provided with all of the comments, as well as staff feedback in response to those for your deliberations, as well as a draft findings of fact. So for the benefit of the audience, I'll do a quick overview of comprehensive planning and how the annual amendments fit into this. So on a statewide basis, we have an enabling law in the State Growth Management Act and several other pieces of legislation that define the framework in which we do land use planning in the state of Washington. The Growth Management Act is the keystone of that. It establishes a lot of requirements from the local level to the regional level, and I'll walk through how each one of those layers affects what we do locally here. So in regional coordination, Kitsap County participates along with King, Snohomish, and Pierce counties in the Puget Sound Regional Council. That is a regional planning body that adopts a long-range plan and covers land use, transportation, open space, and a variety of other things. And in that are multi-county planning policies that we are bound to be consistent with as we adopt our local policies and regulations. More close to home, within Kitsap County, we coordinate across the cities and the county itself, along with the Navy, tribes, and others, in the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. And this body adopts what are called countywide planning policies, and these are required by the Growth Management Act. And these establish a common framework for the cities and the counties to do planning so that there is consistency across their jurisdictional boundaries and as they annex urban growth areas. And then locally, for the unincorporated portions of Kitsap County, we adopt the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan. This contains the goals and policies that guide not just the implementation of building permits and land use permits, but a whole wide range of other community programs. And I'll get into that in a little bit more detail. So our comprehensive plan has to be consistent with each layer above it, essentially, as we've walked through this. And then Kitsap County development regulations and our programs have to be consistent with the comprehensive plan and implement the comprehensive plan. There's an affirmative requirement to implement. So our comprehensive plan was last updated in 2016. It plans out for a 20-year horizon through 2036. Our current plan calls for almost 80% of new population growth to go into cities in unincorporated urban growth areas, and 21% of that population growth to go into rural parts of unincorporated Kitsap County. The comprehensive plan is a 20-year vision for how our community will grow. It covers land use, which is most of the actions that we're here to discuss tonight, as well as economic development, the environment, housing and human services, transportation, capital facilities and utilities, parks, recreation, open space, and for certain geographic areas and neighborhoods, we have sub-area plans. Relevant to tonight is a Silverdale sub-area plan, for example. The comprehensive plan also has strategies for how to implement it, as well as a 20-year capital facilities plan that lays out what infrastructure needs to be developed and what the investments would be needed in order to do that over 20 years. Under the Growth Management Act, development has to pay its way for infrastructure. So the comprehensive plan is reviewed and updated in two different ways. The major update happens every 8 years, and this is when we completely review the entire plan from cover to cover. We look at our 20-year growth projections and roll those out to the next 20-year horizon. Update our land use maps and other components of the comprehensive plan to make sure that we have the land capacity and are in compliance with other policies and state law. Our next update, 8-year update, will be due in 2024. So in between those big 8-year reviews where we can consider the entire plan and shift directions a little bit here or there, the annual review, which is what we're doing tonight, needs to be within the bounds of the existing comprehensive plan, essentially. It needs to be consistent with the existing comprehensive plan. An annual review is only initiated if the board determines there's a need to do it, and the Board of County Commissioners establishes the scope of the amendments that will be considered by resolution, and that can include both county-sponsored amendments, which is mostly what we have this year, as well as applications, and we have one of those this year. But this is a legislative process, and so that means the board has full discretion in scoping and in decision making regarding these amendments. So the Quickly, there's a four kind of phase process that this annual amendment cycle goes through. It begins with that scoping that the board that we've talked about with the board. It begins with interested members of the public, as well as staff and other bodies making recommendations for what could be changed or improved in the comprehensive plan or its maps. Those are cataloged and reviewed annually with the board. They adopt an initial docket of subjects that will be considered. Work goes into developing those, and then they later adopt a final docket that will be then fully analyzed. Staff reports will be prepared, and we'll go through the consideration process we're in right now. So development of the amendments can happen in a variety of ways. For site-specific applications, those are developed by the applicants, but staff consultation meetings are required. At least one is required before submittal. Often there's a lot of consultation with applicants. And then county-sponsored amendments come from a variety of sources. There might be prior public development that has happened over years, or has come from some other process, and there's a comprehensive plan component related to that that has to be addressed. We might establish citizens advisory committees to help develop these amendments, such as the downtown Kingston amendment this year, or some of these are just developed by staff. And then in the analysis phase, we go through the State Environmental Policy Act, the SEPA environmental review process, and develop staff reports that the core of that is the analysis of the decision criteria that the Planning Commission and the board utilizes in reviewing these amendments. And then finally, which is the consideration phase, this is the most public portion of this phase, and oftentimes members of the public may not be aware that there are amendments in development until they receive notification during this consideration phase when we have public comment periods and public hearings like tonight. The Planning Commission will hold many study sessions, and then, as we've talked about, ultimately adopt recommendations to the department and the Board of County Commissioners. Based on the testimony that we've heard at these public hearings and received in writing, as well as the recommendations of the Planning Commission, will update the staff reports and will draft an adopting ordinance for the amendments, and then we'll move everything on to the Board of County Commissioners, where they likewise will have study sessions and public comment periods and public hearings on potentially revised amendments, either from the Planning Commission's recommendations or further department considerations. And then they'll ultimately make the final decision by ordinance, and currently that's anticipated in April. So we do try to provide a lot of public information and opportunities for public participation throughout the process. We have an online open house. We hope that this is the primary means by which folks can come into the process at whatever point in time they've learned about it, and can catch up on information and gain access to all of the relevant documents and processes that have happened. They can submit their public comments online through there. We hold public comment periods. We've had a variety of open houses throughout North Central and South Kitsap. And when we've sent out about five public notifications now throughout this process, we'll probably send out another five, including after adoption. We directly reach a lot of folks through email and some other social media connections. We do more traditional letters and postcards to amendments that are geographically specific. So some folks may be here tonight for the public hearing because they received a letter in the mail because they live near the Dickey Pitt Amendment. We formally communicate with tribes and other means to reach folks. Members of the public can subscribe to an email list to receive future notifications about this year and future years of amendments. So I think most folks are here tonight to talk about the Dickey Pitt, but there are five other amendments that we're considering. These county-sponsored amendments include downtown Kingston. This is a phase two of some work we've done up there to address barriers to achieving the vision for downtown Kingston and address some consistency with some of those regional and countywide planning policies I introduced you to earlier. There's a center's amendment, which is designation of areas as centers. Some of those are growth centers. Some of those are rural centers. Rural centers are mostly around transportation funding and rural employment, whereas urban centers often incorporate population growth and employment growth. And there's regional policies behind some of the new designations or shifts in designations we're making in that amendment. And then to be consistent with state law, as well as those regional and countywide policies, we're clarifying some policy language and adding some language around the association of the Silverdale and Kingston urban growth areas. And with the future cities of Silverdale and Kingston, their future incorporation, that's what's expected under state law over time. And so that amendment is to clarify policy for the state and regional consistency. Another amendment we're doing is around mineral resource overlays, which is a designation to protect mineral resources for its extraction. But in this case, we have a lot of parcels around Kitsap County that, for whatever reason, were designated that are small in size, are residential, or have businesses on them, or are in residential plats and probably should never have been designated in the first place. And so that amendment is to clean up and remove that designation from those parcels where those existing uses are non-conforming. And then annually we have kind of an administrative amendment where we can work on improving code and organizing code that's non-substantive, but it clarifies the comprehensive plan or the Kitsap County development regulations. And then the focus of tonight will be the Dickey Pitt site-specific amendment, so I won't address that in any more detail until the study session. So are there any questions at this point about the amendment process? Okay. So so for the study session, we'll cover the Dickey Pitt site-specific. The staff report is quite hefty with details. I'm not going to go into all of the details, but my goal here is to provide an overview of the amendment and the site, and then in a summary form, address some of the rationale for the department's recommendation and what the department is providing as far as suggestions if there is a consideration for a different course of action on the amendment. So I'll cover that, and then hopefully there'll be an opportunity for questions at the end, but I'm also happy to entertain questions as we go along throughout this. So this is an opportunity for the commission to be able to ask any informative questions or to identify where there might be information that you would like to see before deliberations, and then we can be happy to provide answers or provide that additional information for the next meeting and deliberations. So feel free to interrupt me as we go along. So the Dickey Pitt site-specific application originally came in 2018 in that amendment, annual amendment cycle. It was deferred from that year into 2019. And it was originally submitted under a category of urban infill and redevelopment. It's located in the Silverdale urban growth area in the Dickey Road area, and I'll show some maps here in a moment. It's 138 acres total, and currently it's zoned industrial, urban industrial, and parts of it with a mineral resource overlay, and I'll explain what those mean in a moment. They're proposing that it be rezoned to an urban low residential zoning, which is 5 to 9 dwelling units per acre, as well as neighborhood commercial zoning, which is 10 to 30 dwelling units per acre, and allows for a wide variety of commercial as well as residential and mixed uses. So we did complete a SEPA on this, determination of non-significance, and the department's recommendation is denial of this application. And we'll cover a lot of this time going into the reasons for that. So an overview of the entire neighborhood and area here. So in red outline is the 138 acres of the site. It is a former sand and gravel mine, but it has not yet been reclaimed. So there is an active mine permit on it, even if it hasn't been actively used as a mine, potentially in years. On the site itself, there are some large stormwater ponds up here that are still used for the site, and as I understand it, the adjacent mine as well. Surrounding it is a lot of different uses. So I've oriented all of these maps, and I'll explain why here, so that north is to the right, and that's because at least half the graphics were oriented that way, and I couldn't reorient them. So everything is going to be oriented here on its, essentially on its side, with north to the right. Dickey Road will be to the south. This is Dickey Road along the bottom of the site. And Willamette Meridian Road will be at the top of these maps. And Willamette Meridian represents the urban growth area boundary for Silverdale. And it also, the urban growth boundary touches on the north side of the site here as well. So this active mine here is to the south, they do plan to expand into this 40 acres here, and as I understand it from the operator, that's approximately 40 to 50 years of future operations. In this mine area, there is a bunch of equipment. There's an asphalt plant, rock crushing, machinery, and a variety of other things going on there. Occasionally there's blasting associated with the mining operation. To the west, there's some undeveloped land. There's some industrial business parks along the Willamette Meridian. And there's the Apex Airport, which is a general aviation airport. And we'll get more into what that means relative to this amendment as we go along here. There's to the north, across the urban growth area boundary, is rural residential development, as well as an undeveloped parcel. To the north east, there is an undeveloped industrial parcel. There are high voltage power lines that run through the eastern portion. There's some additional undeveloped and single family residential, legacy single family residential uses here. And then down in the southeast corner is where the Humane Society Animal Shelter is located, and the Silverdale Solid Waste Facility for Kitsap County. There's also the Silverdale Elementary down in the southeast corner, as well as I think the entire district's operations is based out of there, as well as their bus barn facility. And you can see there's urban residential also around to the east. So that's the neighborhood. It's been zoned industrial for a long period of time, since before the comprehensive plan was first adopted. So just a little bit about the history of developing this amendment. In 2018, it was an application, but it was for 108 acres at that point in time, and they were proposing that the entire 108 acres would be urban low residential designated. That's the area in green on that map, surrounded in green. That application was withdrawn, but the board gave them an opportunity to submit a new application in 2019 that was expanded by 30 acres and highlighted in black there. So now it's 138 acres, and it was originally submitted in 2019 with three different alternatives, with varying amounts of urban low residential zoning and neighborhood commercial zoning. Our preliminary review of that application under the State Environmental Policy Act led us to conclude we'd likely issue a determination of significance for that proposal. And there were five significant areas of focus around that. So, one was that population growth capacity that would be added to the urban growth area from this amendment would exceed the adopted planning growth target for the urban growth area. That the employment growth capacity likewise would fall below the adopted planning growth target. So essentially removing employment and adding residential and out of balance with the targets. Those were the concerns at the time. Related to those is the urban services needed for that population or employment. The population numbers drives urban services and planned future deficiencies in those. Another consideration was the reduction of the industrial land as a total inventory for the county, and land use compatibility with adjacent areas. So those were things that we worked through with the applicant. Some of those were very specifically addressed through a revision to their application, which is what we're reviewing tonight. And some of those issues were considered reasonably addressed in the application, in that we would not further review them under the SEPA, but we would review them under the decision criteria of the staff report. So we'll get into some of these topics tonight. So on the left is what the current zoning is. All of this kind of, I guess on this screen, it comes out as kind of aqua, green or blue, is industrial, urban industrial zoning. The hash that covers part of this proposed site is the mineral resource overlay, right? And that's there relative to the mine. And under county regulations, that mineral resource overlay can't be removed until either the site is fully reclaimed, meaning it's regraded and restored or prepped for some future use, or there's an alternative process for getting development permits in place for that reclamation through a development action. So one of those two methods will have to occur as any proposal on this site moves forward. And there'll be some specific language that's recommended in the staff report relative to that. So on the right is the proposed zoning, and the yellow area in the middle is what's proposed as urban low residential. This is 5 to 9 dwelling units per acre. And in the purple is the neighborhood commercial zone, which for residential density allows 10 to 30 dwelling units per acre, allows mixed use as well as a variety of commercial uses. And so the northern portion, the eastern portion, and the southwestern portion are all proposed for neighborhood commercial. The applicant also proposed a road connection from Dickey Road to Willamette Meridian. They are, our latest conversations, proposing that this is a gated access for emergency vehicles on the western portion near Willamette Meridian Road. But as you probably read in the staff report, the county engineer would like to see this as a public road and a public connection that is within the urban growth area. And there's policies like this policy 16 that I've referenced here that supports the need for public road connections within urban growth areas. There's not a strong desire for public management of a lot of new roads because budgets for maintenance and operations are limited. But in a project this large, a spine road connecting and completing kind of a grid connection is desired. So what that might look like conceptually, the red line is a concept. I've simplified it here just by with some dashes, the connecting the dots of where public road connections are desired by Public Works to be consistent with the comprehensive plan. So connecting Dickey Road on the east to Willamette Meridian on the west. How to connect to Willamette Meridian is an open question. There is a public right-of-way, but it's limited in size. And so that's still an outstanding item that you'll see in the recommendations of how to address that if this application continues to move forward. And then there's a desire for a future connection south to the upper portion of Dickey Road. And so Public Works would like to see a dedication of right-of-way to be able to make that happen in the future. And this is part of the long-term comprehensive planning that happens before development projects occur. And as you saw in this policy, it's a required component when it's applicable to an upzoning of property. The applicant also proposed non-motorized connections connecting through the site and to adjacent roads. The purple lines are conceptually what was proposed in the application to simplify where those connection points are. The yellow lines here don't represent the routes, but really just the logical connections between the points. So connecting to Dickey Road, connecting to Apex Airport Road, and Willamette Meridian, as well as this future southern connection to Upper Dickey Road. And then this non-motorized facility that's cutting kind of south to north across the site and adjoining properties is what's adopted in our County Non-Motorized Facilities Plan, which is a part of the comprehensive plan, as a regional north-south spine route that would go through the entire county. And so in discussions with the applicant, what would be considered here is essentially the first segment of that regional route that would continue through future construction through Central Kitsap. This is a graphic that was submitted by the applicant as we began our public process with the Planning Commission. This, I want to emphasize, this is just a conceptual schematic only. This is not a development plan. This is maybe an early drawing. Future development of the site may look like this. It may not look nothing like this. So I just want to make sure that's clear to everyone in the audience and on the commission. But it does provide, it's helpful in providing a conceptualization of what redevelopment of this site might look like under the proposed zoning. In this concept, the darker colors represent more intensive uses, and the lighter colors represent less intensive uses. So you can see that there's a bit of a center up here on the flat area, and another center on kind of Dickey Road. And that relates a bit to what the purpose of these zonings are. So the neighborhood commercial zone is intended to be centers that provide for the quick stop shopping needs of the immediate neighborhood in which they are located. These centers should be based upon demonstrated need and shall be sized in a manner compatible with a residential setting. So that's the stated purpose of the zone in Kitsap County Code. And then the urban low residential zone, it is intended to recognize, maintain, and encourage urban low density residential areas by including a full range of urban services and facilities that are adequate at the time of development. This zone is also intended to create cost-efficient residential areas which are capable of allowing the provision of community service in a more economical manner. As a matter of practice, urban low residential zones are typically single-family residential neighborhoods, although some other uses are allowed in those zones. For contrast, the industrial zone allows a wide range of industrial activities, including heavy industry such as fabrication, warehousing, processing of raw materials, bulk handling and storage, construction, and heavy transportation. This zone is intended to provide sites for activities which require processing, fabrication, storage, and wholesale trade. Generally, these activities require reasonable accessibility to major transportation corridors, including highways, rail, airports, or shipping. So that's the purpose of the current industrial zone. So that was an overview of the site. I'm going to jump into, there's kind of four major points or rationale for why the department recommended denial of the application. So I'll cover these, and if there are questions related to these or other topics that come up as we go through this, I'm happy to discuss those.
I was planning to wait till the end of your presentation. How much more do you have?
So I think about 10 or 12 slides.
Okay. I'll wait till
the end. Okay. So the first is that additional growth capacity not needed for population or employment would be added by this proposed amendment. So for context, in 2016, when the comprehensive plan was updated, the urban growth area for Silverdale was reviewed and even modified at the time, and it was determined that there was adequate capacity within that urban growth area for 20 years of planned growth through 2036. We're 4 years into that 20-year planning horizon. So there has not been a demonstration that there's a lack of capacity in the urban growth area. I think there's probably a widely held belief that there's a low inventory of available housing in the county, but housing units and capacity, land capacity for housing, are two different things. Another consideration related to growth capacity is that population growth, actual population growth, has been slower than anticipated. So the amount of capacity that's being developed for our adopted targets, the actual population growth is less than what we planned for. And so just a couple of slides to represent that to you. So this is the black line in the middle represents the population of Kitsap County since statehood. And there is a very steep line between 1970 and 2000 that represents a lot of growth and expansion within the county. That rate of growth shifted significantly around 2000. And so the brownish-orange line represents what that historic growth rate would have been if it had continued. And the green line represents the continuation of kind of our current growth trend over the last two decades. Looking at that in a little bit more specific context to all this planner talk around growth capacity and adopted targets, this graph is intended to kind of help picture where we're at. So this black line represents actual growth based on census information through 2018, following a fairly consistent pattern. The green line is the continuation of that growth trend. The red diamond here is our adopted growth target, which is our 2036 growth target. And the filled-in triangle here represents that 20 years of planned capacity for growth and population. So as time continues, this capacity should diminish, right, until we hit that target. Every 8 years, we kind of readjust this, so that triangle keeps moving out. We never get to the point of zero, but that's the idea of how this works. So population growth is actually trending slower than what our plan is built to accommodate. If we look at breaking up how population is distributed within the county, in that box there are all of our urban areas. This includes cities as well as our urban growth areas in unincorporated county. The dashed line represents what would be projected as our planned growth, and the solid line represents actual current population rates, so trending below our planned target. And then if we look at the Silverdale urban growth area specifically, that trend persists in that specific geographic area as well. So a second rationale for the department's recommendation is that the proposed upzone would attract growth from to an area outside of the Silverdale Regional Growth Center. Okay? So the Regional Growth Center is outlined in red in that map. It's essentially bordered by Highway 3 and Highway 303. And regional growth centers are intended to be areas of high-intensity residential and employment development. So this is a core of our regional framework for transportation and economic development planning. So this is where the county's comprehensive plan says most of the growth within the Silverado urban growth area should be concentrated, tied to transit and employment and services within this area. Adding capacity, significant capacity outside of the regional growth center attracts growth outside and slows growth within, or potentially slows growth within the center. So to help with explain some of the numbers that you might have read in the staff report, this graph on the top I'll utilize to represent a couple different sets of numbers that you saw. So currently, this graph shows what the minimum number of dwelling units would be allowed in the proposed site. 126 dwelling units is the minimum allowed. The maximum allowed would be 2,904. Now, realistically, you're probably not going to see either one of those numbers. It's likely to be somewhere in between, right? And there's population numbers to go along with those housing units. To estimate population capacity, we do a land capacity analysis, and we have a current methodology for doing that. For this amendment, we estimated that there would be 151 dwelling units within this proposed site, and that represents a population of approximately 377 new people. That increases the capacity of the urban growth area from just about the growth target, 0.3% above the growth target, to 4.7% above the growth adopted growth target. And the county considers anything within plus or minus 5% around the adopted growth target to be within balance for planning purposes, right? We can't be precise down to the tenth of an acre for population. So we give a little bit of bounds around that. So what we do know is our current land capacity analysis methods assume zero population for the neighborhood commercial zone, which is a substantial portion of what's proposed in this amendment. And the applicant has stated that they would like to build mixed-use neighborhoods in that zone. Now, whether that is what they build in the future or not is subject to a future site-specific development proposal, right? But it's likely that what is built will be something more than what's currently estimated just because of that neighborhood commercial assumption. But we don't know what that would be, and that's the nature of comprehensive planning. That's why we do the estimates. In the end, some sites are developed more than what we estimated, and some sites are developed less than what we estimated. So also here are some regional, countywide, and local policies relative to the regional growth center that are the legal basis behind the rationale for this issue supporting denial. So the third is incompatibility with adjacent land uses. So as we did that photo tour around the neighborhood, there is that surface mine with its planned expansion and likely operations to continue for 40 to 50 years. There are existing and future industrial uses. And something important to know is when residential and industrial zones are adjacent to each other, the burden for compatibility lies with the industrial use, not with the residential or commercial use. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then additionally, there's the Apex Airport, which is a general aviation airport, and under the Growth Management Act, our camp plan must discourage incompatible uses. So we'll talk a little bit about what might be compatible and what might be incompatible. So this is that same photo we talked about before. In red and green is the proposed site. In brown is the surrounding industrial zoning. And 82% of the boundary of this site abuts up to industrial zoning. Right? Part of it abuts on the north to rural residential, and part of it abuts on the east to urban residential across Dickey Road. The blue lines on this map represent stream corridors that go through the area. So in some cases, when we talk about adjacent uses like this industrial area, existing industrial area up here, it is useful to understand that the future residential and commercial zoning here would be across a stream and its buffers, essentially across that stream corridor from the industrial uses. So there may be some natural buffering that happens there visually and noise-wise. So it may be useful to understand geographically where those are located. But as you can see, for example, you know, this existing asphalt plant and some of the crushing and sorting that happens in this area are fairly close to the site. And currently, noise regulations allow for a higher level of noise to cross boundaries from one industrial site to another industrial site. Once it crosses the boundary to a residential area or a commercial area, then the noise that's received by that residential or commercial use has to be less than if it were industrial. So some of the potential impacts of industrial uses to the new residential and commercial uses in this proposed amendment would be noise, a variety of sources for those from the mine and adjacent industrial uses. There are safety issues, mine slopes, folks trespassing into the mine, industrial-related trucks and vehicles, dust, light, and odors are potential issues. And on the flip side, there are potential impacts caused by new residential and commercial uses on existing or future industrial uses. So those might mostly come in the form of increased mitigation requirements. So might be greater setbacks, which would result in less acreage of their site that they could utilize for their industrial use or their mining activity. They might have to invest in more sound barriers, quieter equipment, or different types of equipment. There may be limitations to hours of operation in the future, limitations or prohibitions on certain types of operations or land uses once they are adjacent to residential areas, as well as notifications and monitoring might be required. So there are things to consider going both directions here. And there are regional and local policies related to protecting industrial lands from encroachment of incompatible uses. And then as far as the airport goes, the Washington State Department of Transportation has published a set of guidelines. There are excerpts in an attachment in the staff report that highlight things relevant to the context of Apex Airport. These numbered zones in this drawing represent different compatibility zones from those guidelines. What I want to highlight in this is this zone 3, which is in orange. This is what this represents is a turning zone for aircraft approaching or departing the airport. This is where they're starting to turn, either for their approach coming in or for their departure to wherever they're headed to. And this area represents, once they're airborne, the most likely area of a potential crash for aircraft. So there are clear guidelines for land uses within this area. And then zone 6 is a much broader area, and it's represented by this outer dark line. It's 5,000 feet radiating out from the runway, and it represents the area of the traffic pattern around the airport. So for those zones, potential impacts are safety relative to a crash of an aircraft. That's higher in zone 3 than in zone 6. And noise, which is a common issue around airports. The guidelines suggest that incompatible uses are residential development that's at a density less than 15 dwelling units per acre. And I think the context there is that when you get into high-density multifamily development, there's more ambient noise, and there's less internal exposure to noise penetrating into the building. Outdoor commercial activities are considered incompatible. Anything associated with sensitive populations like school children, hospitals, nursing homes, folks that are less mobile or in high concentrations or high intensity uses like stadiums are considered incompatible. And any sort of development that would attract wildlife, particularly birds, is considered an incompatible use. Uses that are considered compatible, and there are some height and some other limitations regarding hazardous materials and those sorts of things, are high density mixed use and residential, so greater than 15 dwelling units per acre. Industrial and business parks, and particularly they'd like to see those with low levels of activity, so not a high concentration of employees and customers. These are great places for utilities and open space or low-intensive recreation. Now, there are case-by-case things to consider, like elevation, flight patterns around the airport as well. So there are formal consultations that we are required to do under state law with the airport as well as with the Washington State Department of Transportation Aviation Division. We've done that, and we're seeking, as part of this process, a follow-up consultation with the final staff report. That has not happened yet. There are policies related to general aviation airports and ensuring compatibility and avoiding encroachment of incompatible uses. I will say, relative to mining, industrial uses, and with airports, there are commonly applied techniques like easements or notices to title that are recorded on adjacent properties so that future purchasers are aware that this noise source exists. And in current Kitsap County code and state law, there's even a provision that once that notice is recorded to the title of a parcel, they lose some rights to claims of noise nuisance against the adjoining use. So the fourth and final one is that rationale for denial is that it reduces vacant industrial land within both the urban growth area and unincorporated Kitsap County by substantial numbers. So the Silverdale urban growth area, this would reduce the inventory of vacant, and I want to emphasize vacant industrial land, by 50%. We should also note that in this area, an additional 120 acres is involved in that mine to the south for the next 40 or 50 years. So that site won't become available for industrial development for decades to come. So there's also industrial land that has a time horizon that is far longer than what we might consider for other vacant land. And then across unincorporated Kitsap County, outside of the regionally designated Puget Sound Industrial Center, which mostly is within the city of Bremerton, but there are a few spots around the boundary that are in unincorporated Kitsap County. So putting that aside, just to clarify, this amendment would remove 36% of the vacant industrial land inventory in the county. So a couple things to consider here is that the site does meet most of the criteria for designating industrial land under the Growth Management Act, and those are recited in the staff report. And at least according to one regional study of industrial land, unincorporated Kitsap County has an adequate supply of industrial land and not an oversupply. There may be some issues the county might have with that particular study. We don't have a local study of our own to utilize, so that is some information to consider put out by Puget Sound Regional Council. And there are policies related to maximizing the use of existing industrial areas, maintaining them for current and long-term growth, And at the bottom there, particularly to Silverdale sub-area plan, there are policies around providing sufficient capacity and an appropriate mix of residential, commercial, and industrial development. And that is in part consideration for what the future city of Silverdale might need down the road when and if it incorporates. So I did mention that there are considerations the department's provided if the Planning Commission or later the Board of County Commissioners wants to consider approval of the amendment. So there is one revision we would recommend relative to airport compatibility, which is those western two parcels would not change. Those would remain industrial relative to the airport guidelines. And then as far as conditions go, there are several parcels that are not legally within the current fire district for Central Kitsap. There's been a contract for service in the past, but there is currently an annexation process the district is going through for these parcels and others. So one condition would be that that is completed, that they're annexed into the fire district so that there is adequate urban services to this future neighborhood. And one of the conditions we recommend is that there would be a development agreement that addresses a variety of things. And part of this is related to clarifying the process for removing the, for either reclaiming the site or removing the mineral resource overlay so that future development of the site can proceed. So part of that is around the project permitting and the CEPA process. The development agreement should address measures to ensure compatibility with the airport, the mine, and adjacent industrial areas. The design, location, and construction of the spine road between Dickey Road and Willamette Meridian, as well as the north-south regional non-motorized route, and the local non-motorized facilities that were shown in those maps earlier.
Mr. Best?
Yes.
Just to clarify, because staff has recommended that if the commission were to approve the rezone, because that's all that's before us right now, is the rezone.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay. That you would want a development agreement as a condition of approving the rezone that would cover all of these components?
Yes. Okay. That is correct. And okay. I've tried to tie in here each of the requirements of where it ties back to either policy or Kitsap County Code. To substantiate why that requirement should be addressed through a development agreement.
Okay, because there's currently no development proposal before the county.
Correct.
Just the rezone.
Correct. Okay. What the purpose of a development agreement is typically for a large, complex, multi-phase type of project, it lays out a process that the county and the developer agree to so that the long-term process of phased development can be orderly and predictable. So one component of a development agreement usually is vesting to a certain set of development codes so that as they go through phases, they're not facing different regulations at different times. But a development agreement in this instance also helps lay out a predictable path for when and how the mineral resource overlay and the reclamation would occur relative to this site, because that's unique to a mine. As well as how some of those policies relative to non-motorized and roads would be addressed,
Mr. Best, if we thought about doing this, would the conditions of approval for the rezone run with the land and bind successors?
So, what we've proposed is that some of these conditions, like the annexation and the development agreement, would have an expiration date of June of 2021, unless the Board of County Commissioners adopts by resolution a different deadline to keep things moving and make sure that we can understand what assumptions we need to make regarding these parcels for the next comprehensive plan update in 2024. It would not run with the land. It would for that time period. Sorry, let me clarify. It would for that time period, but it would expire if those hadn't been met.
So if the applicant failed to do any one of those things that are due by June of 2021. At that time in June of 2021, would the new zoning revert to the old zoning?
Right. So the way that this is a summary. The way that it's written in the staff report is the maps actually aren't changed. The approval is conditioned, and the maps are not changed until the conditions are met. So the maps would look as they are now until the conditions are met, and then the maps would automatically be changed once these are met.
Yes. Is the staff recommending approval with these revisions?
No, the staff is recommending denial, but we wanted to provide this information since we went through the thought process and the analysis. Yeah. Wanted to provide this in case that was you read the policies differently than we did and wanted to pursue a different path.
I have one other question. Yeah. Wouldn't this proposal, as outlined by the applicants, justify a development agreement type of process? Isn't it of a sufficient magnitude?
So there's not a requirement compelling a development agreement as a specific tool. It is a very useful tool in this particular case. So they're not required to utilize it, but it is a good tool to address these issues that they would be required to address.
Okay. Other questions?
I have more, but is this your last slide?
Yeah, so the very last point here is, and I think we mostly addressed this already, but the mineral resource overlay would also not be removed from the maps until either the site's reclaimed or under our alternative processing code, there is a new reclamation plan approved by the county and the Department of Natural Resources, and jurisdiction over reclamation of the site is transferred to the county. So that's the final condition that we would offer for consideration.
Can I ask, just because of its applicability, yes, to what you just said, what typically would we expect as a timeline related to the change of the MRO overlay?
So this is a very large site. I don't know how long it would take to develop plans and submit permits and run through that process. Both the best way to address the reclamation of this site, the most efficient way to address reclamation of this site under code, is to propose a development, run that through the county. That also goes to the State Department of Natural Resources. They would have to approve it as a reclamation plan. And at that point, then jurisdiction shifts from DNR to the county over reclamation. And that would be reclamation of the site would be done as part of the course of developing the site, probably over phases for a site this large, right?
Yeah.
And that likely takes years, but I don't know exactly how long that would take.
Do we have any idea just from the DNR perspective, like is it once a year that those are reviewed or?
That's a good question. I do not know. But if,
okay.
If
but it would be happening in concurrence with what the applicant would be going through at the same time.
Yeah, the our code.
Versus prior to.
Our code sets it up as a sequential process. So the county would first have to approve it, then DNR would review and approve it sequentially. It wouldn't be a parallel process.
I think we have Commissioner Elias, and you.
No, I'll yield first. I've got a bunch.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm the only remaining commissioner from Central Kitsap because there are other esteemed commissioners who recused themselves. He's in the back of the room.
Commissioner Mall, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'm curious whether there are any reasons why it would be beneficial to have reclamation happen sooner rather than later. For example, known environmental contamination or safety issues associated with the former mine, or if it's fine for it to just sit undeveloped for another however long it takes before an industrial developer wants to use it.
Right. There is a recent comment that came in asking about cleanup of contamination. I have more to look into with that. My understanding is this was listed by the EPA as a contaminated site that has been cleaned up, but I need to follow up to confirm that because I ran across that kind of in passing. So that is a potential issue. The reclamation of the site, I mean, once it, the advantage of reclaiming the site up front could be that then it's free and clear of the burdensome process of going through all these hoops to establish a new reclamation plan and the restrictions that are imposed by the mineral resource overlay on the site. That could make it then available for a quicker turnaround or easier turnaround to a sale transaction for whatever the underlying zoning is, whether it's future industrial or future mixed-use commercial or residential. Yeah. But they would have to reclaim to what's adopted currently as the plan, which is very vague, and would likely have to go through substantial regrading eventually anyways for development. So,
and if it has environmental contamination, the standards would be much stricter for residential development than industrial. So.
Right.
Mr. Vestas, point of order. Are you expecting a deliberation following the close of the public hearing on this item tonight?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So we can get some questions out here and then take testimony from the public.
Anybody else? Okay. First one's a procedural. Neighborhood notification is the county's a policy similar for site-specific as it is other projects. I'm assuming we county mailed out postcards to all the adjoining property owners. Within
yes,
the radius?
Yes. Within okay. 800 feet, we mailed the letter.
Okay. And yeah. I'll mention, too, I particularly like the new setup with the feedback we're getting from all the written testimony, because we're getting the summary from the staff and responses, but then we're actually getting the attachments with it. Mm-hmm. So if I want to spend the time, which I do, I'll read through all the documents and the emails, et cetera, to follow the pattern of the testimony. So very helpful if we keep that format for the new stuff coming in, too.
Yes.
I'd like to see that. I think our deadline's tomorrow.
Yeah, the written comment closes tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have all of those provided to us as
okay.
well.
Yes. A few of these you answered later in the presentation, but I wanted to find out, because I noticed a conflict, too, with the industrial capacity, because the PSRC report gives the indication that in Kitsap, if with this rezone in particular, there's a mitigated loss. We'd still be able to meet the targets for industrial. But now twice I've heard you, once at a previous meeting and again today, you showed the percentages of the impact. Mm-hmm. Now what I would like to find out, I think it's slide 33, we were on, when you had the percentages?
Yes.
No, maybe it wasn't. That was another one. Okay, so 36% unincorporated. What is that percentage if you include the PSIC Bremerton area, do you know? And the reason I ask is you, obviously it's a factor of consideration to me, but.
Right. So it's attachment C12, mm-hmm. and that number may not be in that attachment, because what I'm checking is whether I looked at countywide or just unincorporated county. I looked at just the unincorporated county, so I don't have the industrial acreages for the cities.
Right.
But I could extract from the PSRC report that information.
Okay, and I'll go back and look at that. Okay. But you did make the comment that staff's concerned, and I think that report was in 2015,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned there was some criticism about the validity of it. Could you briefly explain that?
Well, so. We haven't gone through in detail to compare the methodology, but we do know the methodology is different. And so when I talked earlier about land capacity analysis and how we estimate
right.
how much employment or how much housing an area of land might be able to be built with, we have a particular methodology for that that's been developed between the county and the cities. And what PSRC did uses a slightly different methodology. The logic flows the same, but some of the variables are different. And so we haven't gone through, line by line to compare how those are,
okay.
right? So we have to take theirs with a grain of salt that on a regional basis, you could look apples to apples to other counties, but it may not, line up
okay.
exactly with how our local estimate might be.
Great. The map you had on the regional growth center of Silverdale, because
yes.
the property is within the UGA, but you've got the designated regional growth center in Silverdale. Do you have, if I was specifically looking for infill in that area rather than redevelopment. Most of that area is already built out. I'm wondering what the percentage is of vacant land in that particular map you have.
I could look that up.
In my mind, if I have the competing interest that if this property is rezoned, we're taking the risk of drawing for potential development in that area, I also want to consider how built out is that region growth center, and then also the market factor too, because it may or may not be available. And that's something that obviously in the 20-year plan that has to be developed. And in the last land capacity analysis and in the last comp plan, what percentage was used for market factor? Do you happen to know?
So it varies depending on zone a bit.
Right. So what was it for Silverdale proper?
Yeah, I'll need to look that up, but okay. I think it's either
15
or 20%, I believe, but I'll confirm that.
Solves that one. Mm-hmm. And then you answered my question about the allocation of population, 315 to 5227, correct?
The range? Say
that again. The units you said were possible from the, especially, you know, from 5 to 9 zoning, et cetera, and then the big range for commercial. You had a range of 126 to 2904 units.
Yes.
But then you also mentioned it anticipated it would be at the low range. Mm-hmm. But the population figure was at a minimum an additional 315 and up to 5,227.
Right.
That's
the
wide range.
Right. The wide range is taking literally what minimum would be required by code and maximum that would be allowed.
Under the new
zoning. Not reflecting what's feasible.
Right.
So it sets the boundaries, right?
Okay.
And the estimate is an attempt to understand what's feasible, but you know, based on some of those assumptions, it's likely to be a little bit more.
Okay. And then the liquefaction report that was completed by NL mm-hmm. Olson, I wanted to find out if the staff had any comment about that, particularly the potential risk from 1 to 5 inches if there were to be a seismic event. I thought it was a very thorough report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so other staff reviewed that report, but the summary is that they concluded or agreed with the conclusion that reasonable construction measures could be used to ensure that you know structures were not at risk in a seismic event.
Okay. But I assume the report
does confirm that there is a liquefaction hazard area there.
Right.
That there's reasonable measures that could be used.
And I assume that the consultant was paid by the applicant?
Correct.
Let me see if I can remember my chicken scratch here. The incompatible use. Oh, the mining. One of the rationale for denial is the incompatible use with adjacent property owners. I'm curious. Now, we listed the property owner, Puget Sound Gravel, correct? Then there was a second, and then the third. And I'm wondering if any of the adjacent properties that we're discussing are owned. I'm assuming they are. For example, the pit, is that owned by the same company?
No, the current active pit to the south is owned by a different company.
Okay. Okay. And then finally, the roads. You mentioned that in the original proposal by the applicant, it did not include, you mentioned Willamette Meridian, the extension, and that the county would like to have those become public roads. What was the response from the applicant?
So the road connection was part of the original proposal from the applicant.
Of the prior project or the current?
I can't remember if it was in 2018, but throughout both the original and the revised submittal in 2019, it was part of the proposal. There's been maybe some shift in whether that would be a public connection or a gated connection. The current, as I understand it, currently the proposal is that it would be a gated connection from the applicant's perspective. We met with the applicant, our fire marshal, and our public works department to discuss it. Just so you thoroughly understand the issue, from a fire code perspective, the fire marshal says a gated access for emergency vehicles would be acceptable to meet fire code. But the public works department has said that since this is within an urban growth area, that grid connection between the two is something we would like to see to be consistent with our policies. And so they'd like to see that as a public connection.
Okay, and then finally, has the staff responded to the other elements of the staff's recommendation? Even though the staff's recommending denial of the project, however, if the commission approves the project under the conditions you've laid out, has the applicant responded to any of those?
I think there has been some discussion that I've not been privy to, so I can't answer that question.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. Other questions? Okay. Is there any additional information you have, Mr. Best?
That's it for me. I'm ready for the public hearing.
Well, with that, we will move swiftly into the public hearing on this matter. Amanda's going to get the sign-up sheet. Could we just get a show of hands of who has signed up to testify? Give me a number of it. Okay, very good. Thinking of keeping the testimony to 4 minutes apiece for public comment. We'll also receive additional written comments. You know, you can also provide that. The applicant has requested some additional time to make the initial presentation, which seems reasonable based on the fact that they're the applicant. So I would propose 8 minutes for the applicant, 4 minutes for everyone who wishes to testify. Is there any objection to that protocol for this? All right. So with that, would the applicant please come to the podium? State your name and spell your last name for the record, and please, we'll be timing you here.
Yeah, my name's Levi Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S. Represent JWJ Group, and I'm the applicant. Been working on this project for a little over 2 years now. Just going to set a timer here too, so I can kind of keep track of my time. So I brought two banker boxes of information. I figure I'll just start reading through it page by page, if that works, in the 10 minutes.
Pick your best two maps and.
So a couple things I'd like to mention. First of all, just on the market, and this is in the draft 2050 vision plan, or vision 2050, but it states that over 85% of people in the Puget Sound region live in single-family residential detached housing. And a lot of the areas in the centers and other parts of Kitsap County don't allow for single-family detached. So I think trying to focus all of our residential inventory into places that don't allow what 85% of our market would appreciate living in and enjoys, I think would probably be unwise. Couple other things just on the regional center. I think it's really important throughout this decision and this process that we stick with the assumptions in the land capacity analysis, the comprehensive plan, and not deviate from that, because it can be easy to kind of get lost in some of the information. For instance, there's a range of what the minimum density could be based on net developable and max density. The land capacity analysis has provided what the comprehensive plan would allocate to this. That's the, I believe it's 150 units, 344 population or something like that. I think we need to keep that in context as we're going through this. Just as an example, I went through the regional center, and it is, I'm just going to pull my page here. So regional center, Silverado Regional Center is approximately 660 acres. If you were to multiply that by its max density, which is 60 units, that'd be 39,600 units and 71,000 population, which exceeds the growth capacity for the entire Kitsap County unincorporated UGA. So I think it's really important to stick with just the assumptions that are in the land capacity analysis and not deviate from that. Otherwise, it could be easy to not keep an apples to apples comparison through everything. We are proposing that this project, and I've I've had an opportunity to discuss this a little bit before with our conceptual plan. It could be a great mixed-use community. That could be mixed-use just with the urban low that's right next door as part of the proposal and the neighborhood commercial. It could be mixed-use with live-work units, with commercial and apartments above. I think there's a lot of great options for mixed-use. That is a potential, but at this point, we're not submitting a development project or project specific for this site. And so I think it's, again, really important to stay at the comprehensive plan level, land capacity analysis, and the non-project level, because there's a lot of things we're going to figure out with development, with setbacks, with zoning code, with how the community and neighbors respond to the project, and that's going to adapt as we go and market conditions as well. So I think it's really important, again, just stick with those assumptions. As far as the neighboring airport, and I've got some exhibits that I can submit, but it's considered a public-private airport, and the way that WASDOT lays this one out, the landing strip itself is the only public portion. That means anybody from the public can land on the strip, and they can take off, but there's no public right-of-way that connects directly to the strip, so they could not get out of their plane and leave the landing strip and go into Silverdale without the permission of an adjacent property owner. Which is part of the HOA that manages the park. So that's the private portion. Furthermore, the entire adjacent land that connects to the airport is all zoned rural residential, with the exception of one property to the south, which is industrial and has a building built on it. It's encumbered by a lot of critical areas as well. So future expansion of the airport is unlikely without a zoning change that would allow other uses that could serve the airport. So I'd say it's more of a hobby airport. With the exception, I was talking with a neighbor just ahead of the meeting, and I know that they can use that if somebody needs to be airlifted to a hospital. And I believe some of the schools and other open space and fields participate in that as well. Another thing, just on the talking about staying at a non-project action level and a lot of the issues that are or concerns that are in the staff report, I think there's some really great detail. There's some good questions that are being asked. That we should talk about, but a lot of them, I would say, are project-specific, not non-project. And the SEPA checklist that we went through, a lot of these issues came up in the SEPA determination. The determination was of non-significance. No mitigation was part of that. And so I think that that is a good reason that all of those issues should be deferred to the project-specific level and worked through at that point. Just going to take a look at my clock here. All right, we're getting down there. As far as the public roads go, from the very beginning, our application has only proposed that that connection be emergency access. It says it on the, I think it got the formatting cropped it out, but we don't have the right to extend public access to Willamette Meridian because we don't connect to Willamette Meridian, and our current easement doesn't allow us to grant that to the public. So it would be onerous to condition this on us providing a public road through properties we don't own that are adjacent to us. We're definitely open to discussing with the county if they'd like our portion to be public and they want to condemn right away or try and make connections where it makes sense in the future. But again, I think that should be done at a project-specific level. But right now, the only right that we have is to do emergency access, and we're working through with the neighbors right now. They'd actually like to limit the easement to say specifically that we would never try and put even full access just for our development through there, let alone the county. So the neighbors would really like to limit it to emergency vehicle access only, and they're the ones that requested it be gated and locked, which is allowed by the fire department. Let's see here. Another thing as far as compatible use is if you look at the entire industrial area that this is located in, it is 100% surrounded by residential use. It's either urban low or rural residential on every side of the entire industrial area. So these uses are compatible. They're next to each other. I submitted as part of my narrative. None of my exhibits were in the staff report, but I'll submit those to the record. All my exhibits that go with the narrative, one of them has about 17 or so locations throughout the county where industrial is either surrounded completely by residential or residential is surrounded almost entirely by industrial and commercial uses next to it. I mean, this happens throughout the county, and this is why the county's density guidelines or design guidelines and all the different various project-specific things will help mitigate through that. That having been said, if we did go through a developer agreement...
In summary.
Okay, in the summary, if we went through a developer agreement, we would be open to working through with the county, potentially leaving a portion of the property as industrial that would create the buffer, so the neighboring properties would no longer be next to an industrial or next to a residential, they'd be next to industrial, and then the burden would be on us to provide the buffer.
Thank you.
I will be submitting inline comments to the staff report and a lot of additional information I think will be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Just the staff.
Then we'll hold those. Okay, thank you, Mr. Holmes. Next up is Richard Chaddock.
Good evening, Commissioners. Richard Shattuck, S-H-A-T-T-U-C-K. I live in Seabeck. I'm very familiar with this site. I raised my children for 15 years, a few lots over from the Dickey Pen on Andrea Lane, just off of Newberry Hill Road. One of the reasons having to recuse myself is I'm also very familiar with a portion of the property that's here today. I had the joy of serving as something of a trustee of a blind trust for the 20 of the acres of the 30 that were added to this project, okay? And if you remember on the map, there's a little legend on there that says abandoned industrial site. And I was the guy who helped try to do something with this property. Coming out of this, we had some retention ponds put in, we had industrial development put onto that 20-acre site, and by gosh, we tried to market it for years and years and years, and we got no bites. Okay, what we did get, and I think Commissioner asking about environmental is really important in this area, is we got huge mounds of dumping. We got tons and tons of furniture put on this property before people took it up to the waste station. We had to bring environmental cleanup crews in for medical waste. We had literally 5-gallon buckets of syringes and needles, hypodermic needles, that were abandoned on this site. And it's really frustrating because this is an area that is really environmentally amazing. It is the headwaters of the Little Anderson Creek. My children and I would explore little box canyons leading off of here. And we're doing, and I know, Commissioner Phillips, you've talked to me about, you know, quit talking about West Hills, about what the planning did to the city of Silverdale, or the area of Silverdale, by putting planning and zoning in place for which there is no market. And the commission will recall what happened was nobody was going to build on the West Hill. The area, we had collapsed houses, and the Central Kitsap Community Council worked for 5 years trying to clean that up, that gateway. And there was no way to do it because there was no market. We're doing the same thing here. I lived on in this area. I tried to sell this 20 acres for industrial use, even with industrial infrastructure put into place. It went nowhere. What we're doing is we're damming this area to sitting fallow or being used for some other potential use that can be used for a mine. I can't sell a piece of industrial property off of Dickey Road that has infrastructure. How am I going to possibly get someone to pay and work on that reclamation for the mine and still convert it to industrial use? Commissioner, you're exactly right. If we leave this open, if we have this industrial property for which there is no use, it won't be reclaimed. Okay? What it will be is we'll get a use that is compatible with the mine. What is that? It's fill. We'll bring garbage from other places, dump it in this mine. Okay? This is an opportunity, Commissioners, to take what is a played-out mine and turn it into what could be a real community treasure. And so I would ask the Commission to take a good look at this. Let's do something that actually has a market that we can do to take this and make it something that's really good for the community of Silverdale. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Patty Charnas.
Good evening. My name is Patty Charnas, C-H-A-R-N-A-S, And I live at 8167 Clearidge Avenue in Silverdale. It's a pleasure to be here. I am here to voice my strong support of this proposed rezone and to offer my categorical disagreement to the points of denial that were presented before public testimony. I live less than a mile from the proposed property, and for close to 10 years, I've walked with my family, friends, my children in this area, wondering aloud when redevelopment would occur that would bring it more consistent with the surrounding neighborhoods and community. It appears that opportunity is with us, in front of us now. 3 years ago, I was recruited to serve as DCD director at a neighboring jurisdiction. However, prior to that, I served as the division manager leading Kitsap's long-range planning. I understand the enormity and complexity of what it takes to prepare the staff report, and I want to express my appreciation to the level of effort that went in to this project. However, I do not find a consistent and compelling basis to support the recommendation of denial. Further, I don't find a punitive impact or a penalty that we would incur to our designated regional growth center in Silverdale. In the most classic sense, this proposal is consistent with growth management in driving development and growth in the levels of service that provide that serve that growth to designated urban growth areas. Just this past weekend, I walked the site with a close friend. And to be clear, there are site development and building limitations. These appear, however, to have been satisfactorily addressed in the attachments to the staff report. So thank you for this opportunity to provide comments as a member of the immediate neighborhood and vicinity of this proposed rezone, and to voice strong support for this rezone. It's the right thing to do. It is a good project. And I encourage this Planning Commission and the Board of Commissioners following it to do the right thing and support this rezone. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Charnas. Next we have Holly Blinn, followed by Joanne Bartlett.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Holly Blinn, B-L-I-N-N. I'm a former planner, a current land use planner for the Kitsap County Department of Community Development. I'm currently employed as a planner and project management, a project manager for the project proponent. In my experience as a current land use planner, as adverse to a long-range planner, I've reviewed many projects and project-specific applications for compliance with Kitsap County codes, including project compatibility with neighboring uses, landscaping, open space requirements, allowed uses, density, dimension, and design, and so on. I've collaborated with other staff for review of environmental requirements, transportation requirements, road requirements, as well as outside agencies like the Washington State Department of Transportation. Most of the concerns raised in the staff report for this non-project action are project-specific review elements that county staff will need to address during development permit reviews. Staff has prepared other non-project action reports and CEPA checklists for projects, for county-sponsored project amendments, such as the 2018 UVC zone changes that included removing maximum densities within that zone, and they've done a really good job at demonstrating the level of review that's required for non-project actions in those amendment applications. The project level review done in this staff report is unnecessary, as any future development of the site will be reviewed for specific code requirements in effect at that time and that specifically relate to the development proposal. That being said, I'd also like to take a moment to address some of the industrial land questions that have been brought up. Give me just 1 second to find my page here. So the staff report contends that the proposed amendment would reduce the availability of vacant industrial land within the UGA by 50% and countywide by 36% outside of the Puget Sound Industrial Center, Bremerton. However, the staff report, pages 7 and 8, explain that the subject properties were assumed developed during the 2016 comprehensive plan update and therefore were never considered available industrial properties to begin with. Additionally, it's incomplete and misleading for the county to simply remove the available properties within the Puget Sound Industrial Center to support their numbers. Of the county's four exhibits, C10 through C13, that note the supply and demand for industrial lands, only exhibit C13 was prepared as part of a study or broader publication prepared by a third party. The other exhibits were prepared by county staff and are lacking market data from credible sources such as the Northwest Multiple Listing Service and Commercial Brokers Association or the National Association of Realtors. The only broader publication states that the PSIC has a surplus of land beyond that required to accommodate forecasts and that dispersed Kitsap County had adequate land capacity to absorb employment forecasts, provided industrial and non-industrial growth occurred with moderate employment and building densities. As noted throughout the staff report, the subject properties were considered developed and not counted towards available industrial lands to begin with. There's little demand for industrial property outside of the Puget Sound Industrial Center. Staff gives an incomplete picture by leaving the Puget Sound Industrial Center out of its analysis. Since the adoption of the 2016 comprehensive plan, there's been very little development of industrial properties. Furthermore, many of the properties that have been developed are utilizing low intensity uses, which are allowed in most commercial zones, including the neighborhood commercial zone, such as public facilities, storage, veterinary clinics and animal hospitals, kennels, general office, engineering and construction offices, automotive service stations, and automotive repair and car washes. Those are in the staff report Exhibit A. I think that should be noted as Exhibit C1. There might be a typo there. Additionally, staff talked about the onus being on the industrial properties for mitigation. While that's true, it's also true that county code requires, it directs buffer sizes based on neighboring uses and zoning for even residential subdivisions. So a standard subdivision would be required to provide a solid screening buffer per Kitsap County code, which requires a minimum width of 50 feet. So to say that all of the onus is on the industrial properties for neighborhood compatibility is not true.
Ms. Blinn, in conclusion?
I'm done. Thank you very
much
for your time.
All right, we have Joanne Bartlett.
My name is Joanne Bartlett, and it's spelled B-A-R-T-L-E-T-T. I'm from Ecological Land Services, and I worked for the proponent identifying the critical areas on the site. And I wanted to stand up and say that I think that if there are a lot more requirements for residential use for critical areas, and I think it's important to note that if the pit stays the same, there will be no improvement to the critical areas. Conversely, if it is developed, it can be improved, particularly for Strawberry Creek, which leaves the north end of the site. And a portion of the upper watershed has been impacted by past pit activities, not recently. So to improve that and do the rezone and make it residential, I think there's tons of potential to provide further protection for critical areas and improve habitat for, not for birds necessarily because of the airport, but for other wildlife. Let's see. I think also there is restoration potential within the sediment ponds, which are not critical areas. They were created for that and are permitted regularly to keep them functioning as sediment ponds. But they can be improved to create additional critical area or habitat areas for some wildlife. By improving the upper part of the Strawberry Creek watershed, you can improve habitat connectivity between the site and other portions of Strawberry Creek, as well as Little Anderson Creek. You can improve water quality by eliminating the pit activities and providing stormwater detention that would be up to current standards, and improve and maintain hydrologic flows within the streams. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bartlett. Next, we have Norm Olson.
Good evening. My name is Norm Olson with NL Olson and Associates in Port Orchard. I do work for the applicant on this as far as geotechnical and surveying services. We're not doing site design on it, but I just need to say that. I do want to talk not so much about the project, but just what's going on anecdotally around the project and also other parts of the county. We're just right now working on a final design for 34 lots, almost right across from the entrance to this property off of Dickey Road. It's right next to 46 lots of a brand new plat, Silverthorne, that's now under construction. Those two plats essentially border this site, and across the street from whatever this is, if it's industrial or if it's residential. I think this is a great area to develop. This after these two plats, there is no more land in this little corridor right here. It's built out. Regarding the denial rationale in the staff report and addressed by the planner, about the first, number one, the adequate supply of land capacity, I just have more anecdotal. We do a design for mini plats in the area, and it seems that the complexity of what we're designing these days, and only we can do that, and it can only be built because of how high the lots are, what they're costing. Example, Woodbridge in Silverdale, I think there's like half a million yards of material that was moved, a mile of road, signal, there's all sorts of mitigation, and that project is feasible because of what it costs. On top of Warner Road, 80 acres of rock is now developed or being developed for land or for housing, and that can only be done because of the high cost of lots. If there was a lot of lots available or a lot of land available for development, I think that the supply would be such that these lot values or these lot costs would not be so high. Also regarding number four, the rationale on the not having an oversupply or not just having an adequate supply of industrial land, we've done a lot of work out there in the SCIA, and it's not included for various reasons, but that road that the port has constructed, the cross-SCIA connector road, it's cost millions of dollars, and we designed some utilities in that road, and since that road has been constructed, there's not been any new industrial development over there, and it's prime for development, and potentially with a new tenant coming in, I think that's going to be the place to go for industrial, not up on this hillside. So that's all. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Next we have Steve Seed, followed by John Johnson.
I'm Steve Seago. I apologize if my penmanship was that. My wife will concur with your interpretation, probably.
Can you spell your last name?
S-E-G-O.
Thank you.
And I'm with Waterman Mitigation Partners is my company, and I live in Port Orchard, Washington. I'm involved in an ongoing project I've been working on for years to do a pretty thorough wetlands inventory or habitat inventory of sites that would be appropriate for restoration, enhancement, preservation, conservation in Kitsap County. I'm from here originally, but I spent decades working throughout the region and in Alaska and other states developing, in our case, in the state of Washington, the first ever permitted wetland mitigation bank in the Snohomish Basin, and have subsequently worked on the Columbia River and elsewhere doing these kinds of projects. And when I returned here 10 years ago, I recognized the need for something of this nature. For a lot of reasons, for habitat and wetlands protections and enhancement and restoration, but also to balance out growth management and development needs. And so with that said, I started doing an inventory, and I've been working from Port Gamble to Blackjack Creek and everywhere in between. I've been in every drainage, I think, and some of them I used to fish when I was a kid, so I knew them. And when I heard about this site a few years ago, and what was most intriguing to me about this site that's being considered and discussed tonight, the Dickey Pit area, is it is the origin or the headwaters for two very important beneficial salmonid stream systems. The Little Anderson you heard about earlier from Mr. Shattuck and just from Ms. Bartlett just now, the Strawberry Creek drainage. And that's very interesting. It's not unique, but it's rare. And it's also, for what I do, an exciting opportunity because here's a couple of stream systems at their headwaters, which in some ways are as or more important to the function and vitality of a stream system than the mouth, where everybody wants to focus all their resources. This is where water temperature and the storage of hydrology during dry season is so important. And the current conditions, there's nothing negative about the current owners, but they're based upon their permit and their buffer and setbacks, and the exposure of those areas is they're just doing what they're supposed to do. And here's an opportunity to actually do something by a rezone that would cause a change in how the buffers are established and an opportunity to do some enhancements, as Ms. Bartlett addressed earlier, and truly benefit those two stream systems, consistent with, I think, are the objectives of this community and this county. So this has been an industrial site for a long time. I heard Mr. Best say earlier that it was in a zoned industrial since before there was a Growth Management Act. Is that correct? Before the first comp plan. And you heard Mr. Shattuck describe the reality of the market. It's always, planning is all about trying to predict the future, and then there's reality, which is what's really happening and has happened. I don't expect anything to happen differently in the near future, but here's an opportunity to do something different and better. And I'm not sure why we came to this place with a denial. I've been watching this very carefully to see how this unfolded. And no discredit to Mr. Best. We know each other well. We served on the Great Peninsula Conservancy Board together. And sorry you're not there still, because you'd have to get up tomorrow morning for a board meeting if you were. I have to. But in any event, I'd ask you to consider rejecting the recommendation of denial and supporting this rezone and recommending that to the commissioners in the weeks ahead. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. John Johnson?
John Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, my last name. Been in Kitsap County since 1984. I did my first short plat in 1987 and done multiple development projects, including Woodbridge with Gary Lindsay. And let me just get a couple of points in real quickly, and then I want to talk about some of the market realities that are going on in this county. We only had 7 business days to respond to the staff report, and I think I've built a reputation of working very closely with the county, understanding the community and raising my 4 kids in this community. I was very disappointed in how the staff report came out because it seemed like every issue that was addressed, they were looking for reasons to turn it down. So I appreciate the role of a planning commission where we have citizens who can take an objective look. We've put together a matrix where every single one of the reasons for denial, we're giving you a counter that is based on facts with documentation, not summaries that are put together randomly without identifying sources and just putting opinions in. So I'd ask you to really look at that matrix. Holly has spent a lot of time with Levi over the weekend putting this together. And so if you decide to approve it with the conditions, it's unreasonable that we have to build these very expensive roads. This project's going to be phased. And I'll just tell you, Levi's my son-in-law. He's a partner in the business. He's the future of what we're doing in this company. He's a real fan of Seabrook, and he's been looking for an opportunity to do a really cool community mixed use but that really achieves a lot of the underlying goals. And he spent a lot of time with Peter. Peter's done a very studious job, but quite frankly, we were shocked with the staff report. So I'd ask you to really give this some independent thinking, looking at the facts that we're going to be filing tomorrow and all of the people that are here testifying tonight. We do have a clean phase 1 environmental. In fact, the advantage of this. This is an opportunity to reclaim something. If you look at the industrial properties that are in that area, there's just a few for sale, but they have very long marketing time frames without anybody stepping up and buying them. One of them has been on the market, I believe, for over 800 days. So anybody in the business knows that industrial land, there is no demand in Kitsap County. Kitsap County is not that type of community. I think there are 2,400 acres down at Skia, if I remember. Might be off by a couple hundred acres. But there's huge amounts of industrial land, and nobody's buying it, which means this property is not going to be reclaimed. The environment is not going to be taken care of. The creeks, the setbacks, everything that's going to be involved if we're given the opportunity to develop this. So, once again, I really appreciate the time that you put into this process, because it's the one opportunity that we have as citizens to ask you to take a look at the facts and make a right decision for our community. So thank you very much for what you do for all of us.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Chuck Madnall.
Thank you. My last name is rarely pronounced correctly, and I really appreciated that. Honorable members of the Planning Commission, my name is Chuck Madwell. I'm a Washington land use attorney with 34 years of experience. I'm here on behalf of the applicant, JWJ Group. In the time allotted to me, I'd like to just touch on a few points in support of the plan amendments and in opposition to the staff recommendation of denial in the staff report. As a preliminary matter, as you've heard, we prepared a matrix because there are so many facts and allegations and points that we need to address. And this matrix responds to each and every issue in the staff report. I've reviewed the matrix, and I invite you to do the same, since it demonstrates why the staff report and evidence in the record do not support denial of this plan amendment. In my opinion, based on my experience with in many growth management hearings board cases I've handled over the years, I believe the board would likely find that the proposed plan amendment is in compliance with the Growth Management Act and the Kitsap County regulations in the unlikely event of an appeal. I'd just like to touch on just now two errors in the staff report's recommendation of denial. First, contrary to the staff's report, the circumstances and assumptions justifying the amendment have substantially changed since adoption of the 2016 Comprehensive Plan Report. That's a requirement of the code. It was mentioned in the report. I don't think it was mentioned tonight. Here, there are those substantially changed conditions. First, depletion of the mine and its readiness for reclamation and redevelopment. In the 2016 Comprehensive Plan, this mine was already considered developed and thus wasn't counted in the land capacity analysis as available industrial land. It now is no longer considered developed and needs to be added to the available inventory and reconsideration. So it's a perfect time to look at the issues, whether this should be industrial land as it is or industrially zoned, or whether it should be zoned as proposed. We think it should be zoned as proposed, and this is a good opportunity to look at that and make the right decision. Second, another change condition or circumstances, Kitsap County and the region are experiencing a housing crisis. There's a great need and demand for housing. And there are a number of reasons, perhaps. I don't have time to get into that, but it's a very important thing to remember. And third, industrial demand for this area is minimal to non-existence. And these are just realities that should be considered when looking at this comprehensive plan amendment. The staff also alleges that the proposed amendment would be incompatible with surrounding uses, with the airport, mines, and industrial uses. This is not a legitimate basis for denial. Not only is there no evidence to support this claim of incompatibility with surrounding uses, at the non-project level, these uses can and should be addressed during project review. In fact, staff concerns regarding compatibility, utilities, analysis of population, jobs and density, the environment, capital facilities, noise, transportation, public service, the whole nine yards, were not considered significant to require mitigation in the DNS that was issued for this project. Again, these impacts do not support a denial of non-project actions and should be addressed during project review and CEPA review. We ask that you recommend approval of the site-specific comprehensive plan amendment for you. Thank you.
Thank you. We've been going now for 2 good hours, and I have had a request for a 5-minute break.
Yes.
So with that, we'll go off the record for 5 minutes and return at 7:30.